to An Artifactual Journey. I'm your host, Philip J. Neural, and today we're talking to Lincoln University alumna Veronica A. Carr, class of 2016. Welcome to the podcast, Veronica.
Thanks for having me. Feels a little weird to be on this side of the microphone today.
What does that mean, on this side of the microphone today?
Actually talking to the microphone. You may not be familiar with my voice. That's largely because I am the editor and producer of the Artifactual Journey podcast. I'm the person responsible for putting it together and making it sound nice.
So in other words, you get rid of my ums and when I eat words and slur and so forth. You make it sound good.
I work the magic.
You work the magic, and that you do. Okay, so today we're talking about pretty much underreported on and recognized example of racial justice, social justice, Black Lives Matter. We're talking about a 1929 case in New York, in Brooklyn, New York, repping all the people that love Brooklyn, that really show the miscarriage of justice with regard to the white police officer and two outstanding and upstanding Lincoln University students.
So yes, in September of 1929, two Lincoln University students, Ralph Baker and William Fontaine, come back from visiting colleagues or friends in New York. And as they step into the train station, they notice a police officer who is in plain clothes, so they don't know he's actually a police officer, running past them with a gun. And just like I would probably do, and I know most of our listeners would do, they'd be scared because...
You know, brother man would be scared.
Here's a maniac in their minds with a gun. So they run. And the police officer, mistaking Ralph Baker for being a man that he was chasing, he shoots Ralph Baker in the back. Baker falls, and Fontaine runs to his side to tend to his fallen friend. The patrolman, Walter Lowe, then arrests the two students, claiming that they had disturbed him and a female friend while they were on the train, then tried to break away from him as he arrested them. Thus, he shot Ralph Baker in the back as he tried to flee.
Stop. This sounds so much like any episode in 2019.
Well, they do say history repeats itself.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. So my famous phrase is, who knew that in 1929, right before the official crash of Wall Street and the Depression jumps off, we have this horrific case? And I think the thing that really upsets me about this case, the more we research it, is that in present day, I can't imagine that the white police officer would be suspended right away. But in this 1929 case, the white police officer, Walter Lowe, gets suspended immediately.
Yeah, as soon as the incident hits the newspapers, the NAACP is all over it. And they send a telegram to the police captain asking for Walter Lowe's suspension. And within hours, Lowe is suspended. I can't even imagine something like this taking place in 2019, because as we've seen in case after case, these officers often remain on their jobs even while under investigation.
So this is a fascinating case in, on so many levels. One, you have a HBCU.
Nation's first HBCU.
Founded in
1854.
Under the name of?
Ashman Institute.
And when did it change?
1866.
To become known as?
Lincoln University. Do I get an A?
Yeah, you get an A. You should, since you graduated from there. On the dean's list of that, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so back to being serious. In this 1929 case, the Lincoln University Alumni Association is active.
They are.
The president of the Alumni Association is living in historic Marble Hill, otherwise known as historic Old West Baltimore. His name is Robert B. McCrary. And you also have the treasurer, John W. Haywood, who is a part of Morgan College at the time. So Baltimore is once again involved in this in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, as we constantly see, all roads lead back to Old West Baltimore, and all roads often lead back to Lincoln as well.
Hence the treasure project that we can talk about at another time. That's also on oldwestbaltimore.com. So we come to this project because a gentleman from the class of 1912, yes, from Old West Baltimore, by the name of William Norman Bishop.
Who I'm in love with, by the way.
She's in love with a person that died in the 1970s, but that's okay. Norman Bishop graduates in 1912, then goes to Yale Law School. He does not graduate with the class of 1915, but does pass the Connecticut bar and is able to legally practice in Maryland as well as Connecticut. This is coming from his collection, and it's fascinating because we're looking at a letter that is going out to fellow alumnus, and they're asking for support. And within this letter, we get to see that Dr. Paul A. Collins was the person at 187 West 135th Street, New York, who was the head of the New York chapter of the Alumni Association. So you have the Baltimore Alumni Association being involved, the National Alumni and the New York Alumni Association helping to raise funds to get one of their own out of trouble. As we stated earlier, William Fontaine was in jail.
He was. He was detained on $300 bail for being an accomplice.
Crime he didn't commit.
Yes, disturbing the peace, a crime he did not commit that someone else committed.
And we also get to know that the president at the time of Lincoln University was
William Halleck Johnson, who actually donated $25 to the legal funds to help Fontaine and Baker.
And how much money were they trying to raise for the legal funds?
They were trying to raise $1,000. And mind you, this is in 1929, before the Depression hits. They're trying to raise $1,000 for these two boys.
And the white president at Lincoln University puts up the first 25.
Which is equivalent to?
In today's inflation calculator, $25 is roughly worth $370 and a little bit of change.
Which is pretty amazing for 1929 for the president of a university. He also promises to be a character witness. So imagine you are arrested, falsely arrested, and you need someone to attest to your character.
Talk about a little bit of some of the other people that were willing to support the two Lincoln University students.
Well, you've got, of course, Walter White, NAACP.
Yeah, he's nationally known.
And James Weldon Johnson, of course, of Lift Every Voice and Sing, but who's
more
also...
More importantly, he's the first black executive director of the NAACP.
Reverend James H. Baker, who's actually the father of Ralph Baker, who comes to this mass meeting in protest of the shooting.
And of course, you have some white witnesses that were riding on the subway at the Troy Avenue station that are also coming to defend these two. At the time, they were identified as Negro or colored boys.
Yeah, so of course you've got conflicting accounts. You've got the officer who is going to try to clear his name by saying he was justified in his actions. And then you've got these white witnesses, like you mentioned, who say, hey, he got the wrong people, actually. He shot the wrong boy.
So this is a really troubling case to me that is close to my heart because of what's going on in present day with the police department on a national level, not just in New York, not just in Baltimore, not just in Michigan or Chicago or Detroit or Kentucky. This is a nationwide mm-hmm. concern of African Americans being wrongly accused, accosted, choked, shot, mm-hmm. killed, jailed under the wrong pretense.
And then having their character marred, having their name kind of pulled through the mud when they're the victims of violence. They're not the perpetrators, not the suspects. They're the victims in this case.
And not only are they the victims, but the pain and anguish that the family members have to deal with when they see what has happened to the police officers. So in this case, who was Walter Lowe?
Walter Lowe is actually the son of the police lieutenant, William Lowe.
Okay, need I say more? Let's repeat that, please.
Can anyone say nepotism for me?
Yeah, can I also say white privilege?
Yes.
And what about the white fragility that he may be feeling at that point? And fragility wasn't even a term associated with white folks in 1929.
So, of course, you know, if daddy is the police lieutenant and he does not want your name pulled through the mud and doesn't want you facing charges, you're not going to face charges. And,
so
of course,
he can pull strings. He can make a phone call. He can do whatever to orchestrate some level of corruption that appears to be rampant in New York and other places, not only in 1929, but again in 2019. The more things change, the more they say the same. So as we wrap this unique segment up of an artifactual journey, what's the most compelling piece of research that we've uncovered with this particular case?
I'd have to say just seeing the black community, the black and white community come together to support these boys. You see the president of their university, the national NAACP, the Brooklyn NAACP, and white witnesses all trying to come and play some part in making sure these boys actually got justice.
That warms my heart. Not only does it warm my heart, it also shows that people are concerned about humanity. They're concerned about doing what is right. They're concerned about the fellow man. And I think the character of those two young men at the time at Lincoln University is, you know, I'm speechless because I can't imagine being a college student, being shot in the back by a police officer, and the other one, Fontaine, being jailed, really. And then, you know, 90-some years later, we don't even know their names.
We don't.
We're so busy recognizing other tragedies of racial justice and social justice and so forth that countless ones that also need to be brought to light. And this is just an example of how when you have an artifact, which is the letter,
you bring in some amazing research
And a few other artifacts, you put it together, you have a very compelling story that is FTM, fresh to the market, and can be discussed in so many different arenas, on a college campus, at a church, in a social media group. The point is, this has everything. It has everything you need to learn about history, learn about the law, mm-hmm. learn about alumni associations, learn about the time period. History does not have to be boring. And we at Nanny Jack and Company aim to always keep it popping with fresh artifacts that are well-researched and connected to present day.
So thank you for listening to this episode of Artifactual Journey. Of course, follow us on social media at Artifactual Journey with Philip J. Merrill. Follow us on Twitter at Artifactual J. And of course, follow our personal social media, Philip J. Merrill and Veronica Carr.
Oh, you left out the YouTube channel.
That we're and we to have grow. Yes, we have a growing YouTube channel, Nanny Jack TV with Philip J. Merrill.
Holla.